catch is that only other needy people will actually perceive the fake alpha to not be needy. Anyone who is confident and less invested in others will see right through the fake alpha. A rich man doesn't need to tell people he's rich. A confident man doesn't need to tell people he's confident. And a guy who doesn't give a fuck doesn't need to go around telling people that he doesn't give a fuck. The persona is actually a front, an act, a compensation, an emotional acting out against the women who hurt him in the past. In the end, anger is just as needy as desperation, and the fake alpha is quickly exposed to actually have been highly invested in sleeping with the women all along. After all, going out and picking up dozens of women requires a lot of time and effort, and one doesn't put that much time and effort into sex with women if one isn't seeking an absurd level of validation. Once this becomes apparent to women, they become naturally repelled by it, like they are with the nice guys, like they are with the gimmicky guys. But there's an important exception here. There are still a certain amount of women who are as needy as the fake alphas, the so-called crazy women. These are women whose need for male attention and validation from outstrips even the fake alphas' need for attention and validation from women. I always tell guys, if every girl you date is unstable and crazy, that probably means that you're unstable and crazy. Confident people don't date unconfident people, and vice versa. Women who aren't needy don't date men who are needy. They simply don't have the patience nor the respect for them. Think about it. A guy who doesn't derive his happiness and confidence in himself from how often he gets laid isn't going to be willing to put up with a highly neurotic, dramatic, and emotionally unstable woman. It simply won't be worth it. The little validation he receives from being with her will not be worth the headache she gives him. But a man who does derive his identity from sleeping with many women will put up with any type of woman. In fact, neurotic and crazy women are more appealing to him because they're more likely to put out. Conversely, a confident woman who doesn't define herself by the man she dates is not going to have time for a guy who spends his time trying to impress her. The little bit of validation she receives from it is not going to be worth putting up with the fact that she's dealing with a guy who's far needier than she is, and therefore she's not going to have any attraction for him. But if you take a guy who is obsessed with sexual validation he receives from women, then the only women he's going to be less needy than are the women who are very needy for the attention they receive from men. This is the definition of attraction. This is why the classic pickup advice is all geared towards drunk party girls. The type of women who you will find drunk in a nightclub are the most likely to be the highest invested in sexual validation out of any of the women you could normally meet. Therefore, these tactics or the fake alpha persona is the most likely to work on them. It's also why there's a lack of long-term relationships among pickup coaches in epic proportions. Most of them are incapable of maintaining a lower level of investment than the woman in the long run. This is because of all of the tactics that they've learned and taught are short-term remedies, not deep, lifelong change. They've never actually lowered their identity investment and become permanently attractive men. They've merely thought up more and more ways to conjure high investment from whichever women they're speaking to. But as we've seen in these very common examples, all people eventually return to their baseline levels of investment, and until one is able to permanently alter their baseline level of investment in themselves, they will continue to attract the same types of women and end up in the same failed relationships. Permanent change to the amount of one's identity one invests in their relationships with women is hard and a process that encompasses all facets of life, but it's a worthwhile journey. As a man, it may be the most worthwhile journey. And the key is probably something that you wouldn't expect. In fact, it's something that most men turn their nose up to when they hear it. It's vulnerability. Chapter 3. Power and Vulnerability. Quote, "I do not conquer, I submit." Giacomo Casanova. When most men hear the word vulnerability, their immediate reaction is to associate it with weakness. In general, men are raised to withhold their emotions, to not show weakness, and to ignore any hint of introspection. On top of that, most of the popular pickup advice out there encourages guys to be aloof, standoffish, judgmental, and at times scathing towards women. Men have a lot of negative assumptions about the ideas of being more vulnerable and opening up to their emotions. Chances are it makes you a little skeptical or queasy to see this chapter. But don't worry, I'm not going to have you hold hands with some wimpy support group and recite lines like, I love myself and I'm a happy person. I want you to think of vulnerability in a more broad way. Not just emotional vulnerability, although we'll get to that, but physical vulnerability, social vulnerability. For instance, making yourself vulnerable doesn't just mean being willing to share your fears or insecurities. It can mean putting yourself in a position where you can be rejected, saying a joke that may not be funny, asserting an opinion that may offend others, joining a table of people you don't know, telling a woman that you like her and want to date her. All these things require you to stick your neck out on the line emotionally in some way. You're making yourself vulnerable when you do them. In this way, vulnerability represents a form of power, a deep and subtle form of power. A man who's able to make himself vulnerable is saying to the world, I don't care what you think of me. This is who I am, and I refuse to be anybody else. He's saying he's not needy, and that he's high status. Most people think of a man who's vulnerable as a man who cowers in the corner and begs others to accept him or not hurt him. This is not vulnerability. This is weakness and neediness. Think of it this way. There are two men. One stands tall, looks straight ahead, looks people in the eye when he speaks to them, says what he thinks, is unconcerned with what others think of him. When he makes a mistake, he shrugs it off and maybe apologizes. When he sucks at something, he admits it. He's unafraid to express his emotions, even if that means he gets rejected. He has no problem moving on to people who won't reject him, but like him for who he is. Now the second man hunches over, eyes dart around, and is unable to look anyone in the eye without getting uncomfortable. He puts on a cool persona that is always aloof. He avoids saying things that may upset others, and sometimes even lies to avoid conflict. He's always trying to impress people. When he makes a mistake, he tries to blame others or pretend like it didn't happen. He hides his emotions and will smile and tell everyone he's fine even when he's not. He's scared to death of rejection, and when he is rejected, it sends him reeling, angry and desperate to find a way to win back the affection of the person who doesn't like him. Which one of these two men is more powerful? Which one is more vulnerable? Which one is more comfortable with himself? Which one do you think women would be more attracted to? From an evolutionary perspective, vulnerability makes perfect sense as an indicator to women of a male's status and fitness. Let's say there's a tribe of 20 men, all hunters-gatherers, all men with more or less equal possessions, or lack thereof. Some of the men in the tribe are constantly reactive to what the other men tell them. They don't admit faults, they change their behavior and what they say to win the approval of the other men. When something doesn't go their way, they look to blame someone else. What would this say about their status within the tribe? If they're basing all of their behavior on the approval of other men and are constantly covering for their weaknesses, it says that they're low status, not trustworthy, needy, and probably not going to be a dependable father. Now imagine other men in the same tribe who are unfazed by neediness or temper tantrums of the other men around them. They focus purely on their task at hand and don't change their behavior based on what others think. When challenged, they stand up for themselves, but when they're wrong, they also admit their faults, as they see no reason to hide their weakness. They have a sense of honor. They don't react to any of the other men around them. Rather, the other men react to them. This behavior implies high status, a man who is dependable, comfortable in his strengths and weaknesses, a man who can be counted on and who is likely to rise through the ranks and provide for his family. He's likely to succeed and likely to be a dependable father. My belief is that women have been naturally selected to choose high-status men based on their behavior first, and then on their looks and accomplishments second, as looks and accomplishments tend to be reflected by high-status behavior, not the other way around. This high-status behavior is a man who is comfortable with his vulnerability, who isn't afraid to express who he is, warts and all, to the world. This plays out in multiple arenas, in the life decisions he makes, which will be covered in Part 3, the extent of his courage, which is Part 4, and the way he communicates, which is Part 5. Chances are, if you're reading this and are bad with women, then you're bad with women because you don't express your true feelings and intentions very well. Perhaps you're afraid to approach a woman you find attractive or ask them out on a date. Perhaps you consistently fall on the boring conversation topics because they're safe and shallow, and you don't have to risk offending or inciting anyone with them. Perhaps you're stuck in a job or lifestyle you don't truly enjoy, but because other people always told you that it was a good idea and you didn't want to upset or disappoint others. Perhaps you haven't exercised or groomed yourself to the extent that you could because you didn't want to stand out too much. Dressing extremely well makes you feel uncomfortable. Smiling at strangers makes you feel creepy. And the idea of hitting on women openly scares you because of the possibility of rejection. All of these are symptoms of a root problem, an inability to make yourself vulnerable. Many men, like you, and like me, were raised in such a way as to not express our emotions freely. For whatever reason, maybe our home situation, maybe childhood trauma, maybe our parents didn't express their emotions either, we all grew up with habits embedded deeply into us to keep us stifled and bottled up. Don't be controversial. Don't be unique. Don't do anything crazy or stupid or selfish. I was the same way. My entire young life, I was terrified of anyone not liking me. The mere thought of someone hating me, girl or guy, would literally keep me up at night. As a result, every aspect of my life revolved around people-pleasing, hiding my faults, covering my tracks, and blaming others. And needless to say, I barely had any success with women. And when I did finally get a girlfriend, she left my ass for a man who could actually express himself. This all may sound hokey and new agey, but trust me, it's not. Connecting with women in this way, by being vulnerable as opposed to compensating or becoming a fake alpha, will result in some of the best interactions and relationships of your life. In the past 3 years, I've had women thank me for having a one-night stand with them. I've had women tell me that our week together meant more to them than their entire 4-year relationship with an ex-boyfriend. Women asked me to take their virginity because I was the first guy who they had ever met that they trusted enough to do it. I have beautiful women from all over the world that I keep in touch with years later and share wonderful memories with, some of whom I spent less than 48 hours with. Vulnerability is the path of true human connection and becoming a truly attractive person. As psychologist Robert Glover says, humans are attracted to each other's rough edges. Show your rough edges. Stop trying to be perfect. Expose yourself and share yourself without inhibition. Take the rejections and lumps and move on because you're a bigger and stronger man. And when you find a woman who loves you for who you are, and you will, revel in her affection. But opening oneself up to vulnerability, training oneself to become comfortable with your emotions, with your faults, and with expressing oneself without inhibitions doesn't happen overnight. This entire book is kind of a how-to guide for vulnerability, disguised as a seduction manual. But it's a process, and at times it's a grueling one. Subsection, the pain period. When undertaking any self-development or change in behavior, there's going to be an initial pain period. The pain period typically happens in the beginning of the change of informing of a new habit. And it's usually quite painful. Whether it's bodybuilding, learning a new language, starting a new job, there's going to be an awkward and difficult period where you're going to struggle, fail at times, and most of all, feel vulnerable. Most people absolutely hate this feeling and avoid it as much as possible. Being vulnerable hurts. It's embarrassing. That first time you approach a girl in a bar in your life, chances are you're going to be freaking out. And if she doesn't react well, you're going to feel really stupid. That first time you pick up to call a girl you like, that first time you go in for the kiss, these are all nerve-wracking moments that are not very pleasant to go through. And chances are, the more you've bottled up your emotions throughout your life, the more painful these actions are going to be. As vulnerability researcher Bren Brown said, "The less you talk about your shame, the more of it you have." This book presents many ways in which to change your life. How to dress better, express yourself better in conversation, approach women on the street, make women laugh, become physically intimate, build a network of friends who make you happy, and much more. But all these things have one thing in common. They're going to require you to open up to being vulnerable. Whether it's forcing yourself to make some new friends or forcing yourself to go in for that kiss that you've always been afraid to go for on the first date, you're going to be making yourself vulnerable. And the feeling's going to suck. A lot. You're going to feel uncomfortable. You're going to come up with rationalizations about how you'll do it next time. You'll plan ahead, procrastinate, and then replan, and then procrastinate again, and then decide that you need to read this book a couple more times, all because you're scared to death of that vulnerability. Maybe you've already done this. Maybe you've already spent months or years avoiding taking action because you're afraid of the consequences. Maybe you've put off that career change, that wardrobe upgrade, joining that dating site. Maybe you've missed opportunities with women who liked you because you were too afraid to make a move. Maybe you convinced yourself that you needed to quote-unquote know how to do it first. Maybe you convinced yourself that you needed to see someone else do it first. These are all forms of avoidance, and we'll get into them and pick them apart ruthlessly in part four, but the point is making yourself vulnerable is really, really, really hard and can be really, really, really painful. And the less vulnerable you've let yourself be throughout your life, the harder it's going to be to start. But slowly, you'll chisel away at yourself. You'll humble yourself, expose yourself, and then learn that it's okay. It's okay to be rejected. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to say something stupid. Women will not dislike you for your rejections or mistakes or saying something stupid. They'll like you for your ability to be okay with being rejected, to make mistakes, and to say something stupid. The man who always has the perfect line to say to her is the man that she will not trust, because he shows no vulnerability, and his words are inauthentic and therefore needy. The man who has some good lines and some bad lines and is able to admit the latter and laugh at the former, this is a man that she will trust and a man she will open herself up to, both emotionally and physically. That's because a man who becomes comfortable with his vulnerability becomes the opposite of needy. If neediness is prioritizing others' perceptions about you over your own, then vulnerability is the exact opposite. Being vulnerable forces you to accept and prioritize your own perception over those of others. Why? Because you have no choice. As you make yourself vulnerable, you'll experience rejection. And as you experience rejection, you'll be forced to upgrade your own sense of self-worth. There's no other option. Slowly but surely, you'll chisel a don't-give-a-fuck attitude out of yourself that is genuine, yet giving at the same time. But this can only be done by consistently exposing yourself and opening up your emotions and true thoughts first to yourself and then to those around you. This isn't pretty at first. The worst part of the pain period is the fact that most people who have been stifling their emotions their entire lives have pent up a lot of anger, frustration, and shame over the years. Typically, the older you are, the more you have pent up. And when you start to express this anger and shame, it's not pretty. You may find yourself behaving irrationally, developing strange beliefs, or becoming angry at many people. In many cases, this is why I support men who struggle with vulnerability to see a therapist as they go through this process. Often, part of the pain period requires men to become an overcompensating fake alpha. For many men, this is part of the process. They've been walked over by women their entire lives, and so as they open up and become more vulnerable, they unleash a lifetime of frustration onto the women they meet and sleep with. The danger of this is becoming convinced of and comfortable with this type of worldview. Some men overcompensate and they never come back. But most do. For some, they need to overcompensate to survive the pain period. Others don't need to compensate at all. For them, it's just a long, hard struggle of self-actualization. Whichever path yours ends up being, maintaining some form of self-awareness is going to be key. Some of you may be reading this and thinking, well, that's all fine, but I already express myself really well, and I'm pretty aware of my emotions. Really? See, I don't buy it. In all my years doing this, the single common thread between every man I've worked with who has problems with women is either a lack of awareness of his own emotional motivators or an inability to express his emotions freely with those around them. And what the sad part is almost all these men think that they're fine. We always think we're fine. But I'll say this. If you consistently find it difficult to keep a girl interested, if you suffer large amounts of anxiety around women, if you feel like you need to prove something to yourself or to others, then there's something there. Trust me, there's something there. And there's something you're not expressing or some emotion you're not in touch with. Subsection: Vulnerability of Showing Desire. The true power of vulnerability is that it resolves the investment paradox. The investment paradox, as mentioned in the previous chapter, is the conflict between the two aspects of female attraction. Women are attracted to men who are of higher status than themselves, or in our terms, men who are less needy. They are also aroused by men who desire them. The paradox is that typically, if a man shows desire towards a woman, then he's also showing some degree of neediness, or that he's lower status. The common term for this is, quote-unquote, putting her on a pedestal. The pickup artist community sidestepped the paradox by coming up with tricks and tactics which are able to show women desire while simultaneously giving the appearance of not showing desire and being needy. This works, but only in the short term. Vulnerability short-circuits the paradox. A man comfortable being vulnerable will not behave in a needy way. And when desire is shown without neediness, it's purely attractive. When desire is shown with neediness, it is unattractive. Think about it this way. Tom approaches Sally. Prior to talking to her, Tom hovers over her shoulder for a good 30 seconds. He's a little drunk. Once he works up the nerve, he leans in and has a big grin showing both excitement and nervousness. He asks for her name and sticks out his hand. His voice wavers a bit as he tells her how pretty she is. She's flattered, but she's a little uncomfortable. She says thanks. He holds her hand a little too long and stares at her and says, "No, really, just so, so pretty." It's getting a little awkward now. Sally kind of wants her hand back. Tom is looking around now and seems to be scrambling mentally to think of something else to say. He finally comes out with a weak, "So, where are you from?" Sally's now completely uncomfortable and finds an excuse to leave. An hour later, Bill approaches Sally. Bill is well-dressed and seems to be in control of all of his actions. When he approaches Sally, he walks directly up to her and unapologetically stands directly in front of her. She looks up at him as he sticks out his hand. He says, "Hi, my name is Bill. I thought you were very beautiful and wanted to say hi." His handshake is as firm as his voice. His slight smile shows confidence. Confidence that even if she told him to fuck off, Bill probably wouldn't really care. Sally gives a meek thank you and blushes. Bill then sidles up next to her, putting his arm halfway around her, and begins to tell her a story of something that happened earlier in the night. He doesn't ask if she wants to hear a story. He doesn't wait for her to ask him something. He just starts talking, as if what he has to say is the most important thing in the world. And again, if she didn't want to hear it, Bill would probably just go find another girl to tell the story to. And that's fine. As mentioned in Chapter 2, women are tuned into a man's overall behavior and demeanor. Not what he says, not how much is in his bank account, but they look at what his behavior is and what it says about his level of neediness. The way to combat neediness is by opening up to vulnerability. If you look at romance novels, which, by the way, I actually recommend you don't, unless you're a masochist like I am, you'll find more or less the same story arc in all of them. Strong male hero, sometimes a bit of a bad boy, but usually a strong male who lives life on his own terms, i.e., a doesn't take a shit from anybody type of guy. The female hero pines for the male hero. They meet, and at first they don't get along. Man is insensitive, and there are just too many barriers for them to being together. But as the novel goes on, the male hero's flaws are slowly exposed, and he's forced to accept them. And usually, with the help of the female hero, forced to come to terms with his vulnerability. He eventually opens up his innermost feelings for her, becoming a strong bad boy, but with a heart. She supports him and guides him. They fall in love and live happily ever after. Or sometimes somebody dies. The end. Romance novels are basically pornography for women. There's a reason they follow the same general themes and storylines the same way real pornography follows the same themes and, well, lack of storylines. Women want a strong, independent, high-status male, a doesn't-take-shit-from-anybody bad boy, but they want this bad boy to have depth and a sensitivity that they only open up and show when they're around her. To me, it might as well be reading a Martian cookbook. It makes no sense to me. But women go absolutely wild for it. Romance novels have been by far the best-selling genre of books for decades now, and they show no signs of letting up. In fact, data from the publishing industry in 2009 says the gap is even widening further. Romance novels are becoming even more popular. The point is, despite what every fiber of your being may be telling you, opening your thoughts, actions, and feelings up to being vulnerable actually defines attractive behavior in men. Being an independent and confident person depends on it. Acting on your desires and making moves on women depends on it. And once she gets to know you, displaying it to her will make her go weak in the knees, plain and simple. But there's a catch. Usually when I give men the vulnerability spiel, their first reaction is to say, "Oh, okay, so I'll tell her all these sob stories and she'll get turned on." It's not that simple. We'll go into this in depth in Chapter 12. But the meaning of your communication is your intention, not the data that's conveyed. So telling a woman a sob story with the intention to make her feel sorry for you is actually going to come across as needy and self-serving and not vulnerable at all. It doesn't work that way. When women connect with you emotionally and your desire for them, it's not what you're saying or the words that you're choosing. It's the emotion behind those words. If the emotion behind your words is needy and self-serving, then she will become turned off no matter what you say. If the emotion behind your words is genuine and vulnerable, then it will turn her on. Yes, you can fake this stuff in the short term if you become a good actor, but obviously I don't recommend that. So the catch is that your statements must be authentic. Your statements towards women must be unconditional, otherwise it's not really being vulnerable. If you tell a woman that she's beautiful only because you think it will give you a better chance of sleeping with her, then amazingly, she will not be very flattered. If you don't believe me, try it out sometime. Give women false compliments and see how they respond. They won't respond very well. So, the catch is that everything you say must be as authentic as possible. There's no shortcut. There are no tricks. You say it because you mean it, and you mean it because you say it. The more nervous it makes you, the better, because it means you're being authentic and making yourself vulnerable. How attractive you are is based on your non-needy behavior. Your non-needy behavior is based on how vulnerable you're able to make yourself. And how vulnerable you're able to make yourself is based on how honest you are to yourself and others. Which brings us to our next chapter, the gift of truth. Chapter 4, the gift of truth. Quote, "The only thing that's capital T true is that you get to decide how you see things." David Foster Wallace. Most men can relate to the idea of having to try to pick up girls without looking like you're trying, or trying to be cool without looking like you're trying to be cool. Entire books and schools of dating advice have been built on this idea, pursuing a woman without actually letting her know that you're interested in her. Like I described before, this works, but it's a short-term solution. Ultimately, it's needy behavior, and no matter how much misdirection you run on a woman, you're going to eventually show your true self. The only women it's going to work on are the ones who are so needy themselves for attention from men that they still perceive you to be high status. On top of that, walking the tightrope of pursuing her without her knowing that you're pursuing her requires a lot of attention and effort. You can slip up easily. It's very unforgiving and ultimately not a very enjoyable process. Besides, all of the attention and effort on gaming women this way ironically encourages you to be even more highly invested and needy, therefore decreasing her likely attraction for you. As we covered in Chapter 3, honestly demonstrating your interest in a woman short-circuits this issue. It's a loophole in the investment paradox. The debate of whether to show interest to a woman or to not show interest to a woman has been raging in pickup circles and men's dating advice for well over a decade now. And as time goes on, the show interest camp is slowly pulling ahead. It's leading to more success, less effort, and more honest interactions. And here's why. The biggest criticism of showing interest to a woman that you want to be with is that it immediately shows you as highly invested in her responses. When you say, "You're cute and I wanted to meet you," that translates roughly to, "Hi, I want to be with you and am officially invested in the prospect of it happening." What they miss, though, is the subcommunication going on underneath what's actually being said. The subcommunication is, "I'm totally okay with you rejecting me, otherwise I would not be approaching you like this." Think about it. If a guy wasn't comfortable with the prospect of a woman rejecting him, he wouldn't have been honest in the first place. In fact, he would have pretended that he wasn't actually interested in her. The fact that he honestly approached her with his intentions, that he puts his nuts on the chopping block and makes himself vulnerable to her immediately, actually subcommunicates a non-neediness and attractiveness in and of itself. And it shows desire for her, which is also going to trigger arousal. What you actually say doesn't matter. It's why you say it that matters. Always, no exceptions. You can have the best line in the world, but if you're saying it because you're needy and desperate to get her to respond to you, then she's immediately going to sense that you're highly invested and therefore low status, not confident, and not an attractive man. It won't work. This is why selling pickup lines is ultimately a futile process. I could sell you the best 100 things I've ever said to women, but I can't sell you my intentions or my lack of neediness. Only you can develop those yourself. The first time I experienced this firsthand was a truly eye-opening experience. It happened back in 2006. I was still naive and relatively inexperienced with women. In fact, I had only been going out and trying to pick up girls for less than a year, and I was still adamantly convinced that I needed to have the best lines and jokes to get a girl to sleep with me. And that's when I first ran into one of the most important lines of my life. "Hey, honey, can I pee in your butt?" Wait, what? I stood there horrified as my friend shouted this at literally every attractive girl who came within 5 feet of us. At the time, to help myself get better with girls, I decided to start hanging out with a couple guys who got laid more than anyone else I knew. The idea was that I'd go out with them, study what they said to women and their interactions, and then emulate it. I'd just listen to what they said, and then I'd go out and say the same thing, and I'd get laid too. Easy, right? Enter my friend Matt, and can I pee in your butt? Matt was a guy I briefly met once through a friend, but his reputation was widely known. He was in a rock band, had tattoos down his arms, and banged girls like it was his job. I'd run into him by chance a week or two earlier, and this was my first time hanging out with him for a whole night. As you can imagine, his "can I pee in your butt" comment wasn't entirely successful. In fact, I think just about every girl ran away from us in horror. Matt was drunk, and I was seriously questioning what the hell I was even doing out with him. But then something funny happened. A couple girls laughed. And then suddenly another girl actually hung around and kept talking to us. Needless to say, back in 2006, there wasn't anything written in pickup manuals about how to transition out of "can I pee in your butt" opener. So I stood there awkwardly and confused, waiting to see how this would turn out. Next thing I know, Matt is telling her that he's going to lick her butthole tonight. Okay, forget this. I'm getting a drink. I don't want to be associated with this guy, and I don't want to be around when he gets thrown out of the bar. About 10 minutes later, Matt comes and finds me, and surprisingly, he's got his arm around the girl that he'd been talking to. She's got a huge smile across her face. Hey man, we're heading back to her place. It was great hanging out. We should do it again sometime. Wow. Really? I sat there in the bar alone, trying to piece together what I had just seen. It made no sense. It went against everything I had ever known about women my entire life. To this day, this was one of the most pivotal nights of my entire development. Was it that I learned that "can I pee in your butt" is the right thing to say? No, actually, I still think it's pretty awful to say that. What I learned is that regardless of what you say to women, the intention and implications of why you are saying it are far more powerful. You can say the lamest and grossest or funniest, depending on your perspective, thing to women, and if the subcommunication is, "I really don't care if you laugh at me or run away horrified, but here's who I am, take it or leave it," this subcommunicates a rock bottom low level of neediness and an incredibly high level of vulnerability. Does this mean that saying grotesque things to women for no other reason than to self-amuse will get you laid? Not necessarily. But the reasons why have to do with values and demographics, which are covered in Chapter 8. Does it mean that you should go out and try to say things like this? Well, actually no. And guess why? Subsection: the truth is always shining through. I'll go ahead and tell you why. I actually did go out and say, "can I pee in your butt" to women the next week. Can you guess what happened? Nothing. In fact, I got a bunch of weird and disgusted looks and not a single laugh. Do you know why? Because I was saying it to look for a reaction. Once again, I was highly invested and needy in how women responded to me. I simply did not get it at the time. It didn't matter what I said or didn't say. If I said it in a way that demonstrated I cared too much about how they responded to me, it would never work. This is because the truth is always shining through. You can't fake vulnerability, and you can't fake honesty. By their very definition, it's impossible. Pickup theory and men's dating advice give women very little credit when it comes to this. Women are generally more intuitive to emotions, motivations, and social cues. Men are not. We may think we're very clever when we come up with a cute little line to approach a woman, thinking that she has absolutely no idea that we're secretly hitting on her. But she does. They always do. And not only does she know we're hitting on her, the fact that we seem so concerned about not getting rejected will turn her off. The fact that we have had to contrive lines and fake stories in order to start a conversation with her, whether consciously or not, signals to her that we are highly invested and not truly attractive. You cannot fake not being needy for more than a moment. The only women you will manage to fake are women who are drunk or high or extremely needy themselves. Truth. Confident and truly high-quality women who are less invested in the attention they receive from men are not going to have much patience for your lines and games. They'll either see through them and see you for who you really are, scared to express your vulnerability, or they will simply assume that you're not worth investing in because you'd rather just talk about spells or games or whatever. If you are a fake alpha or an overcompensating player, then your obsessive nature around sex will seep through your actions and your lack of actual interest in her as a person, and it will repel any women of true dignity and grace. It will attract needy women full of meaningless trifles and drama. who will only serve to fuel your anger and antipathy towards women further. You cannot fake vulnerability. You cannot fake truth. Truth has to be a gift, given with no conditions or expectations. You are who you are who you are. Even if you lie about yourself or act, this is actually saying much more about you and your character than the content of your statements. The truth is always shining through, and people will eventually sense a disconnect. You can tell women that you're a record producer and friends with Jay-Z, but chances are, unless you're a really good actor, people are going to sense subtle inconsistencies in your behavior to back that up. Sooner or later, they will. Then your true identity will shine through, your lack of vulnerability will shine through, your neediness will shine through, and you will be a sad, pathetic, and unattractive man. This is an extreme example, but it plays itself out the same way on a smaller scale. Let's take a classic example of pretending not to be interested in a girl to get her interested in you. If you pretend you don't like a girl, ignore her, act like she says what she says is stupid and uninteresting, when in fact you do like her and you are interested in what she says, subtle cues in your behavior and body language will slowly but surely tip you off. It will be apparent that you're being rude to her as a way to compensate for your insecurity around her. Or if you do manage to get your insults to work on her, it will be because it's clear that you're not needy and low invested enough that she sees you genuinely aren't affected by her reactions to you. If this is the case, she was going to be attracted to you regardless, and the fact that you've been insulting her is gratuitous and unnecessary. Subsection, unconditionality. But what about guys who gush about how beautiful a woman is? What about guys who buy women drinks and beg them for dates and call them incessantly and tell them how they're always thinking about them? Those guys are being honest about their intentions and their feelings, but they're not getting anywhere, are they? But once again, they're not being honest about their intentions. They may compliment a woman and buy her things, beg her for attention, but their intentions are conditional. They're not genuine. You're only giving praise and affection under the assumption that you'll receive it in return. Remember, being non-needy means that your emotions and motivations are less affected by her than hers are by you. When you lavish gifts and praise on the woman who has not done anything to earn it, you are subcommunicating a desperate need for her attention and validation, a willingness to sacrifice your self-respect and wealth to win over her affection. It demonstrates a willingness to alter yourself for her to greater degrees than she's willing to alter herself for you. Remember, this is the definition of neediness and being unattractive. Once again, it comes down to what's being subcommunicated rather than what's being communicated. When in doubt, check your intentions. Think about it. The average guy at a bar who goes around buying cute girls drinks, why is he buying them? So the girls will sit there and talk to him. When he comments on how beautiful they are and how he's so infatuated with them, why is he complimenting them? So that they'll like him. When he pays for fancy dinners and offers to buy them jewelry, why is he doing it? So they won't leave him. These are not gifts or compliments at all. These are deals he's brokering. Everything he gives to her, he is giving it to her expecting to receive something in return. The drinks are not unconditional. They're bought with the provision that she stays and talks to him. The compliments are spoken with the provision that she shows him affection. This is a subtle form of manipulation, and therefore, at its core, dishonest. Once again, most high-value, non-needy women will see through this immediately and not hang around a man who does this. In fact, the only women who will go for a man like this are women who are superficial and willing to trade their affection for material and superficial gain. These women are soulless and suppress their emotions as much, if not more, than the men who buy things for them. True honesty is only possible when it is unconditional. The truth is only the truth when it is given as a gift, when nothing is expected in return. When I tell a girl that she is beautiful, I say it not expecting anything in return. Whether she rejects me or falls in love with me, that's what's important is that I'm expressing my feelings. I don't use my compliments as a bargaining tool. I give them out genuinely. A needy man will give a girl a compliment without knowing her and wait expectantly for her to repay him in either her company or with thanks. I will give compliments only when I am honestly inspired to give them, and usually after already meeting a woman and displaying to her that I'm willing to disagree with her, willing to be rejected by her, and willing to walk away from her because I'm not needy, and therefore high status. When a compliment comes from a man seeking nothing in return, it's a gift of truth, a piece of his vulnerability, and infinitely more powerful as a result. And this honest compliment inspires women to become more highly invested in return, Paradoxically, seeking no investment from her will inspire her to invest that much more in you. Beautiful women are complimented on their looks often, and 99% of these compliments are given out of neediness, out of some idealization of who she is or what she can do for him. Beautiful women have been conditioned for most of their lives to know when a man is being genuine or not, whether a compliment is a gift or a bartering tool. And when it is a gift, when it is honest, she recognizes and appreciates a man who actually genuinely appreciates her. Women are people too, believe it or not. And as people, we all value those who value us, genuinely value us, not expecting something in return. The biggest aphrodisiac in the world is someone who likes you. A woman's desire is to be desired, but it has to be genuine desire. It can't be a, I'll desire you as long as you boost my ego and impress my friends kind of desire. Again, we'll return to the subject of very beautiful women in Chapter 8, but the point is that genuine no-strings-attached appreciation is rare in this world, particularly from men. Women value this and invest themselves in the rare man who can demonstrate his vulnerability to her. Here's the litmus test. Look at your actions and words around women and look at the intentions behind them. These intentions are always speaking 10 times louder than your actual words. What are they saying? If you bought a girl a drink so that she wouldn't leave to talk to somebody else, what does that intention say about you? It says that you were needy and behaving in a manner that was not attractive. If you told a girl a story in order to impress her and make her like you, what does that intention say about you? It says you were needy and behaving in a manner that was not attractive. If you invited a woman to a restaurant in order to impress her with how much money you had, what does that intention say about you? It says that you were needy and behaving in a manner that was not attractive. A man who feels he needs to buy or steal a woman's attention or affection through entertainment, money, or superficiality is a man who is not confident in his identity and who is not genuinely attractive. Sure, some women will stick around and go for these things, but they are women who are not confident in their identity either, and therefore they're needy as well. I should add that these aren't all-or-nothing propositions either. Look, we all want people to like us, and we all like to impress others. We all need some validation sometime. We all do these things to certain degrees. It's impossible to be perfectly non-needy all the time. But neediness is relative, and that's why I say it's about being less invested in women instead of being not invested in women. It's an important difference. It's impossible to not be invested, but it is always possible to be less invested. That's all it takes. She can be the most invested person on the planet in what others think of her, and if you're the second most invested person on the planet, she'll probably be attracted to you. But not vice versa. Subsection, setting boundaries. But delivering honesty unconditionally isn't just about compliments and appreciation. Unconditional honesty can be brutal and scathing at times as well. And strangely enough, brutal and angry honesty can turn a woman on just as much as the most genuine compliment. Again, it's not about what's being said, it's about the intention and the subcommunication behind it. When you're willing to cut a woman off and tell her when she's out of line, when you're willing to tell a woman that what you will and will not tolerate in your life, this subcommunicates the most powerful elements of attraction to her, far more powerful than an entertaining story or game. This is why it's quite possible to piss a woman off and turn her on at the same time. Any man experienced with women has had this happen to him before. It's about drawing boundaries. If a beautiful woman says something that a needy man finds offensive, he'll ignore it, change the topic, or withhold his true feelings. A non-needy man will tell her what she just said was offensive. A man who is vulnerable is unafraid to draw boundaries about what he's willing to accept and not willing to accept from people around them. This is often misconstrued by fake alphas as a free ticket to tell people they're always wrong, or to basically do what they want without paying attention to the feelings of others. Again, that's overcompensation and actually the behavior of someone who is needy in the reactions of those around them. A non-needy man does not seek to impose himself on the boundaries of others. He's merely interested in maintaining his own boundaries. If a woman makes fun of a non-needy man's friend, he will not hesitate to tell her that he thinks she's being a bitch. If a woman says she needs to leave a date after 30 minutes, he will not try to trick her into staying or beg her to stay. He will not yell at her or lecture her on manners. He'll smile and say, "Nice knowing you," and not call her again. When in doubt, check your intentions. If a woman asks to bring a friend on a date, he'll say no. He'll not agree placidly or complain to her that what she's doing is ruining his plans. He'll simply say no and leave it at that. If she threatens to not come out, then he'll say, okay, and go find another woman. Most questions or problems men email me with, at their core, somehow involve a failure to set boundaries. Whether it's about a date, a girl not calling him back, a woman making fun of his job, or whatever, his perceived problem is simply him not manning up and telling her what he's willing to accept and not willing to accept. Typically, it has to do with something like the following. Here's an example email. She really liked me and gave me her number. She responds to my text, but when I tried to get her out on a date, she made excuses. So then I texted her some more, and she said she wanted to see me, but when she did show up for the second date, she was late, and she left early, and she didn't kiss me. Now I'm texting her, and she's texting back, but she won't agree to a third date. What do I do? Usually guys like this are obsessive about the games that women play or how to deal with tests from women. My answer to these men are always the same. If you make it clear from the beginning that you're unwilling to put up with these games, then not only will the women you attract stop playing games, but you'll stop attracting women who do. In the example above, my plan of action, I would have told her flat out that if she wasn't excited to be on a date with me, then I'd rather her save us both the time and not show up. Yes, I'll actually say this to her face. I've said something similar to women probably 5 to 10 times. Without exception, they're completely stunned. Their jaws usually drop. Often they immediately apologize and say that they didn't mean to be so flaky. Oddly enough, my honesty and complete willingness to be rejected or to reject them demonstrates my non-neediness and for the first time makes them incredibly attracted to me. Some of the time, they say, "You're right, I don't want to date you," and that's okay. She just saved us both a lot of time and effort. Your ability and willingness to establish boundaries is inversely proportional to how needy you are. Men who are needy and lack vulnerability will keep their boundaries loose and open, inviting manipulation and other people to walk over them. This is because they are more than willing to alter themselves in order to receive validation from the women they meet. Men who are not needy establish strict boundaries because they value their own time and happiness more than receiving attention from women. When it comes to making yourself more vulnerable and making yourself less needy, the first step is often to begin establishing your own boundaries. Learn how to say no to people, particularly women. Start having opinions on what you like and don't like, what you'll tolerate and won't tolerate. Be honest with yourself, painfully honest, and then be honest with her. The problem with forming strong boundaries is that to form them, you have to be particularly aware of your own desires and emotions, and many men who have been needy their entire lives are not very self-aware. Men will often have to spend a lot of time seeking truth within themselves first, before they're able to expose it to others. Subsection: Finding Your Truth. Here are some truths that I've found out in the past few years. My overwhelming desire for affection from women probably has a lot to do with my unique relationship that I have with my mother. My parents' divorce left a deep-seated fear of commitment in me that still permeates throughout my sex life to this day. At the death of a friend when I was young somehow ended up being one of the most inspiring moments of my life. That a lot of what I considered cool when I was younger were really just ways to sabotage myself and medicate my emotional wounds. That I resent my dad. That I have an obsession with my masculinity. It's easy for me to say these things now, and what's important is not the words. What's important is the floodgates of emotions that came up as I discovered these truths about myself. As I discovered these things about myself, it allowed me to express previously stifled emotions in my daily life and with women. Because as I've discovered each one of the above truths about myself, I've then been able to draw boundaries based on that truth, which in turn makes me less needy. For instance, when I first started going out, I spent a lot of time beating my head against the wall trying to pick up hot club girls at loud nightclubs. You know, fake tans, fake tits, fake hair, fake personalities. For whatever reason, I couldn't keep their attention long enough. Eventually, after pushing things further and spending more time and effort in those places than I care to admit, I went home with a few of them. And, well, it was pretty disappointing. What I discovered is that there was not anything objectively better or more interesting about these girls. In fact, what I was chasing was status, a pat on the back, basically reliving and redeeming all my failed high school moments where the pretty girls didn't pay attention to me. It had nothing to do with these girls. It had everything to do with me. And on top of that, I learned something important. Girls who make themselves look fake have little depth to their personalities, and that's not something I find attractive at all. Now when I meet a Now, when I meet a girl in a place like that who doesn't show me any depth to her personality, I'm unwilling to put any effort into getting to know her. My boundary's established. I value curiosity, education, intelligence, and authenticity. I also don't value fake looks such as pounds of makeup, bronzer, hair extensions, or super tight skirts. Okay, maybe I do value the tight skirts. But the irony? Because that boundary is established, I'm not invested in these women much at all. And as a result, I get more attention from them than ever before. It's important to look at the reasons why you're needy around women and have an honest discussion with yourself to try to resolve it. For instance, perhaps you're needy around women because you're a virgin and have no experience with them. Then you need to look at how being inexperienced is causing you to undervalue yourself and seek validation. You must become comfortable with the idea of being inexperienced and be comfortable admitting that insecurity if you wish to gain a lot of experience. Or perhaps your ex-girlfriend left you for another guy and you're very angry. You go out with a fervor that borders on revenge, a revenge against all women for the betrayal and hurt you felt. Before you can undo the anger that is causing you to be needy, you need to come to terms with why you're angry and accept why your girlfriend left you. For me, a big part of this was accepting that actually, I'd been a pretty naive and shitty boyfriend to my ex-girlfriend, and I could understand why she would want to leave me. I also recognized flaws and insecurities in her that I hadn't noticed when we were together, that she hadn't been such a perfect angel that I thought she was. All in all, I came to terms with the experience, and the anger receded, allowing me to let go and become less needy in the women I dated. Another example is a guy who has never been cool before. Perhaps he was picked on growing up and made fun of all through high school. Maybe the popular guys in school told me he was gay and a pussy. Perhaps now he's older, better looking, and more social, and is looking to compensate for all those years of feeling insignificant. But at some point, he has to come to terms with this, accept it, and become comfortable admitting it. Again, if you're only trying to get girls to impress other guys, then you're not in a very good place, and you're very needy. To undo this, you must come to terms with why you're seeking that attention and approval from other men. Maybe it goes as far back as your father. And then seek to find that approval through other means. Join a sports team. Take your coworkers out for beers. Buy season tickets to the local basketball team. There are much healthier ways to get male camaraderie than to try and impress other guys by getting girls. For me, I had a combination of the second two examples. I spent most of my adolescence living alone with my mother. As a result, I always related more to girls than boys and had very few male friends until I reached adulthood. I never could relate to them as well, and not having my father around as much drove me to unconsciously seek a lot of approval from other men. Throw on top of that the fact that my girlfriend of 4 years left me, and I had a lot of anger towards women. Combine the two, and you have a perfect recipe for a nice guy turned fake alpha and overcompensating player. Recognizing and accepting these truths is not the only thing that allowed me to resolve and let go of a lot of my investment and neediness towards women's approval. As soon as my need to impress other guys dissipated, so did my investment on how a drunk girl in a bar thought of me. As soon as I let go of some of my anger towards my ex, some of my need to fuck absolutely everything disappeared too. As a result, I became less invested and less affected by the actions of the women around me, which in turn made me less needy and more attractive to them. I became comfortable with my vulnerability. Seeking the truth within yourself is an arduous long-term process. An entire book could be written on it by itself, and many have been written. But I guarantee that you have some deep-seated truths that are currently causing you to invest too heavily in how women treat you. Otherwise, you wouldn't have bought this book or read this far. If you feel like you have some serious emotional issues, or believe that for whatever reason you're basing an insanely high amount of your identity on how women respond to you, then I recommend therapy. Therapy has a lot of negative stereotypes and judgments that come along with it, but if you take the time to find a good therapist who you trust and gel with, it can be extremely helpful. The importance of therapy is to remember that it's a tool, not a solution. A therapist is there to guide you and motivate you in continuing to find your own emotional truths about yourself. He or she can't find them for you. A lot of people show up to therapy and expect the therapist to magically fix them. They then get frustrated when all they do is talk and get asked annoying questions all session. Those questions are asked for a reason. Be proactive in finding the emotional knots in yourself that you didn't know were there. You'll discover some amazing things. That time the neighbor's kids locked you in the closet all afternoon, or the time your mother went home and forgot you at the grocery store, or parents' divorce, or a death of a loved one. These all have emotional repercussions that can and probably will motivate you and drive you to overinvest in receiving validation from one specific source or another in your life. And that source is often women. Following the advice in this book should help as well. All advice in this book is crafted to help you behave as a less needy man. Enacting these behaviors and becoming more aware of your emotions while you're doing them should help you down the road to permanent change. As you'll see, the book is divided up into three core areas in which you begin implementing into your life and help you discover your truth and become less invested. Building a congruent and attractive lifestyle for yourself, overcoming your fears and anxieties, and becoming socially adept at expressing your emotions and sexuality without shame or hesitation. All three of these sections will help you chip away at carving out your own fundamental confidence. And as we'll talk about in Chapter 7, these things are all interconnected. When you work on one of them, you indirectly benefit the others, and vice versa. Guys used to ask me, "What should I work on, my inner game or my outer game?" My answer was always both. You can't isolate the two. Developing your inner game and confidence requires testing yourself in social situations. Developing your social skills and overcoming your fears will, in turn, build confidence. Subsection: Friction and Projection. I'd like to finish up the chapter discussing a couple of exceptions when it comes to being vulnerable and non-needy around women. I know at the beginning of the book I made the promise that being less invested in any particular woman is invested in you will make you her perceive you to be attractive. Well, that's true, but just because she perceives you as an attractive man doesn't mean she'll immediately want to jump in the bed with you. There are two main exceptions that prevent attracted women from wanting to be with you, and they come up often: friction and projection. Friction is when a woman finds you to be an attractive man, but there are external circumstances that prevent her from acting on that attraction or being interested in you. For instance, let's say you're a rock star who spends his nights getting drunk and banging groupies, and she's a born-again Christian who has sworn off all sex before marriage. That mismatch in personal values is going to disrupt any attraction that there may be, and is a genuine piece of friction that is going to prevent anything from happening. The most common case of friction is the girlfriend or wife. This happens all the time. You meet a woman, you two really click, she's laughing at all your jokes, smiles when you smile, but she's married. And not only is she married, but she makes a point to cut the flirting off. She's into you, she likes you, but she values her marriage much more than her attraction to you. And there's nothing you can do about that. Guys often ask me how to get a woman to cheat on her boyfriend or husband. And let's not even get into the ethics of it. But my answer is always that you don't get them to cheat. They decide on their own, and you just happen to be the right guy at the right time. What gets women to cheat on their husbands is not meeting the most attractive man on the planet, but the removal of the friction between her life choices and yours. Friction can be as deep as a difference in personal values, beliefs, or religion, or logistical. For instance, some legit friction could be if she lives in Australia and you live in New York. That creates some problems for hooking up, despite a strong attraction. There's usually at least a little bit of friction in any interaction. You're never going to like 100% of any girl, and no girl is ever going to like 100% of you. There will always be slight differences in values or priorities that will irk you just a little bit, or maybe a lot. There will also be unavoidable situations and events that will cause obstacles to you two hooking up. Whether this friction prevents a sexual relationship from occurring, though, will depend on the strength of your boundaries and how strong the value is. For instance, you may meet a really hot girl who is a cocaine addict, but if you kind of just want to have sex with her, you may overlook the cocaine addiction. Then again, if you have a major moral issue with narcotics, then you'll probably be turned off and pass up on her. Ultimately, it's determined by your values and hers. You can still find her physically attractive, but not want to hook up with her. Projection is completely different. There are a lot of women who, for whatever reason, are afraid of their own sexuality and/or openly sexual men. They harbor trust issues and resentment with men. Usually this is because they have a history of some sort of emotional or sexual abuse, and they've experienced a long string of disappointments or anger with boys growing up or former boyfriends. When confronted with a confident, non-needy man, these women will usually be untrusting and lash out in response. They're not lashing out for a lack of attraction. but they are lashing out because they are attracted, and that strong sexual attraction scares them. Their view of men is negative, and when they are confronted with a positive and attractive man, they'll often attack you and try to find ways to tear you down. In fact, the more non-needy and vulnerable you make yourself, the more projection responses you'll invite from women. The rejections I get these days tend to be harsher than ever before. The difference